Can Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown coexist? Is there enough passing on the Celtics? And why do I love Boston? It's a Mailbag Friday here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Millie, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Happy Friday, end of your work week, and I'm glad you're spending at least part of it with me, John Corrales of MassLive.com. I'm their Boston Celtics beat reporter, and every Friday, I do a mailbag podcast. If you're new to the show, I do a podcast every Monday through Friday, at least throughout the busy part of the offseason. At some point, I admit, I'm going to go down to three shows a week. But while other shows are doing three shows like now, or two shows now, or one show now, I'm still doing five. So stick around with the Locked On Celtics podcast. It's free. It's daily. So go ahead and subscribe. Or if you want to wait till the end of the show, you can subscribe then. Regular listeners, thank you very much. You know I love you. Always appreciate these questions. And man, am I flooded with questions. I mean, so many questions. I'm going to ask, maybe you limit it to one per email. I have people emailing me like three and four questions at a time. That's fine. If you want to do that, that's fine. Maybe I'll end up doing two mailbag podcasts. Here's how the mailbag works. I do a piece on Mass Live every Friday in conjunction with the podcast. All of the questions that I get throughout the week are answered either on masslive.com or on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Now, I just finished writing a 3,500-word monster of a mailbag. All of these mailbags have been huge, like at least 3,000 words, which is a long... I feel like the old Bill Simmons, I don't want to compare myself to Bill Simmons, but I feel like those big monster pieces. So I'm doing those first on Mass Live, and then I'm answering the questions that I couldn't fit into that on the podcast. So I've got a lot of questions here. So let's just dive into it. First question comes from Anthony C., who basically asks, do you think the tandem of Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum is good enough to win a championship in the next 2 or 3 years? And the reason I ask is if you look at the champions of the last 20 years, there has not been a team to win that has similar type players. He says he's looking at LA with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Okay. I think the heart of this question is either of those guys the clear number one, or is this kind of like a partnership duel type of thing? First of all, my answer is, yeah, I think they can be. I think they could be the heart of a championship team for sure. I think Jason Tatum has ascended, and I mean, obviously he was an all NBA player, so he's clearly one of the top 15 players in the NBA. Jaylen Brown is not that far back. And I think with some improvements, he can be an all-star next year, and he could be knocking on the door of a potential third team all NBA type of a season. You know, I don't think saying that Jaylen Brown having an all NBA season next year would be shocking. Maybe you say it's probably not going to happen, or maybe you don't expect it to happen. But if it does, you're not going to sit there and be like, oh my God, I can't believe Jaylen Brown made third team All-NBA. And Jason Tatum, you could say, well, he made third team. Maybe he's going to make a step forward. Linear improvement is not always the way things work. We've seen that. But at the heart of the question, I think those two guys can coexist. I think they can improve to a point where they're the clear 1-2. I think the Celtics can bank on them being the 1-2 and can build around those guys being the 1-2. I think mostly because Tatum can be the 1 and Jaylen can be one hell of a 2. And that's not a knock on Jaylen, which I know people are going to bust my balls and say, oh, here comes the Jaylen hater again. But I think Jaylen Brown easily is the second best player on this team is going to be, I think that that's something that the Celtics can expect. And as far as coexisting, people love to, and I'm not saying this about Anthony or someone who asked a similar question on Mass Live. I'm not saying this to, like, I don't think Anthony's asking it this way, but a lot of people do bring this up, so I'm going to bring it up too. For some reason, people want to say, well, oh my God, this guy's a young guy and he wants to be the number one. This guy's a young guy and he's, you know, trying to be whatever. Can they be on the same team together? Can we, like, maybe let these guys play? Jaylen Brown just signed a 4-year contract extension. I think he's fine playing next to Jason Tatum. If he didn't want to play next to Jason Tatum, he didn't have to sign the extension. Or he could have said, find my way out of here. He likes playing in Boston. He has said he likes playing in Boston. He very clearly likes playing in Boston. I think he and Tatum play off of each other very well and do different things well. So I don't, people want to make this coexist thing some sort of problem. And I think mostly it's like talking head sports talk radio stuff that is trying to, I don't know, drive a conversation, drive listens, drive calls. If you're not paying attention to the Celtics, I don't think a lot of people really think that these two guys can't play next to each other. I think most people expect them to be able to play next to each other. So I think they can. I think they will. I think they're locked up for 4 more years at least after this season together. So yeah. And I think Tatum is ascending to a point where he can most certainly be a leader on this team moving forward. Okay, I've set this whole mailbag thing up. I just answered one question. I'm going to come back and answer more, including what my dream offseason is, and then some Hayward stuff, because people love to ask about Gordon Hayward. He is the thing to talk about on the Celtics offseason. That is all next. First, what is your wall? You know you hit a wall just about every day. Is it the one in the middle of the afternoon where you're walking around work and feeling like you could take a nap? Because I've done that before, wondering which office might be open. I can go in there and set my alarm for 15 minutes. No one will notice if I'm gone for 15 minutes, will they? Or is it that wall before you go to the gym and you're sitting in your car trying to motivate yourself, trying to get to that gym, say, okay, come on, just go through it. Just go do it. Just go do it. Built Go is going to get you through that wall, whether it's mental or physical. Built Go is from the people who make Built Bar, which I have raved about all the time. They come in easy to take 1.5 ounce packages. It is an energy gel, which you can cut open and throw into like a protein shake, or you can just take it like a gel. Like if you've seen guys in the, you know, the Tour de France with those little gel packs, you can take that, which I've done. And it's really delicious. It's like a 5-hour energy without that same crash feeling. And it's all natural. So you can put it in your bag, your golf bag, if you're out there, you know, hitting the links for a couple more times before it gets cold or starts snowing, because winter is coming. Whether you want to go into your, you put it in your gym bag and have it for something that you're going to power through a workout, or just throw it in your work bag and just use it as a way to get through your day. It comes in 3 delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, chocolate mint. It combines energy gel with collagen protein, which is fast absorbing, so it gets into your system fast. It's loaded with good stuff like beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine, B6, B12 vitamins, and that collagen promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health, so it can actually make you look better too. Visit BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED, and you will get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at builtgo.com. Let's go. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify. Lots of mailbag questions to still get to. You can email those questions to jcorrales@masslive.com. Anytime throughout the week, I will answer them here on the podcast or on masslive.com. So make sure you go to both places. If you sent something in and it's not here, it's on masslive.com. Oscar F. asks, well, first states, my dream offseason is trade up with picks 14 and 26, Robert Williams to Atlanta for the sixth pick and draft Okongwu. If Cantor opts in, use 30 to flip him. If not, draft and stash 30. For free agency, target Serge Ibaka, Aaron Baines with the taxpayer mid-level. If not, if neither of them, we target Rondo as our backup point guard. I think we prioritize center. I believe Marcus Smart can be a great backup point guard. What is your dream offseason? Off-season for the Celtics? Do you prefer a trade up or trade out? Who are your favorite players to target with the taxpayer mid-level? Jeez, trouble speaking. Any realistic trades that you like? So the dream offseason, it's hard to say. What's the dream? I don't get into the dream offseason, but I think the best way to go, I like the idea of trading up. I've grown to appreciate the thing behind trading up for Okongwu. I think Atlanta wants to trade out. I think New York wants to trade out. I think other teams might be interested in trading out, but I don't think I'd go higher than six. If Okongwu is still available after six, maybe you target the eighth pick with New York. Using 14 and 26 to trade up to eight, I don't think you need to trade Robert Williams. I'd like to keep Robert Williams. My dream offseason includes Robert Williams getting good enough, and I wrote this on masslive.com, so this is a little bit of a preview. I think the best thing that could happen for the Boston Celtics next year is Robert Williams taking the starting spot from Daniel Theis. I'm not saying like Daniel Theis not being the starter. I'm saying that Daniel Theis being still the Daniel Theis of this past season, still being that good, but Robert Williams taking that starting spot from the Daniel Theis that we've known all this past regular season. That's the absolute number one best development, I think, that the Celtics could get. Because I do expect some improvement from Tatum. I mean, I guess you could say the number one best thing you could get is Jason Tatum becoming the best player in the league, but aside from that, really, I'm just saying that Tatum, Robert Williams, becoming the starting center and taking that from Daniel Theis would be amazing. So I'm not trading Robert Williams. I'm really not. I don't think I'm ready to give up on Robert Williams yet. I think Aaron Baines is a great target for the taxpayer mid-level. That would be, now obviously, that would change a little bit about the Celtics hierarchy at the center position. Maybe you just keep that three-headed Baines, Williams, Theis thing, and Theis's role gets reduced because he's probably gone. In this scenario, in my dream scenario, Robert Williams ascending to that level, you bring in Aaron Baines for toughness, you can minimize Daniel Theis and keep him around as a pick-and-pop type of guy. That would make the front line just devastating. As far as any other realistic trades, I think my dream offseason would also include Gordon Hayward opting out and re-signing for maybe 3 years or four or whatever. But I think Hayward opting out and re-signing long-term precludes any sort of trading of Gordon Hayward. So there are no other trades that really stick out as a dream scenario. So trade up, get Okongwu, maybe sign Aaron Baines. Wait, no, now that I'm talking it out, you're drafting a big, so you would have to trade one of them, wouldn't you? So trade up, get a Kungwu, sign Aaron Baines. Robert Williams is your third guy. Maybe you use Daniel Theis as a way to get some shooting. Maybe you trade him, or you keep Daniel Theis. Forget Aaron Baines. You use the mid-level to get like an Alec Burks type, and just use that mid-level to split it between two shooters. That's probably better. I mean, I love Aaron Baines, but yeah, now that I'm talking it through and I realize that drafting a Kungwu is drafting a big, if Robert Williams becomes the player that he is, that I'm saying he's going to be, and you draft a Kungwu and he works out, you don't need Daniel Theis beyond this year, but you keep him for this year. And you split your mid-level again between a couple of shooters, and that's it. I like Marcus Smart as the backup point guard. So that's where I land. Gordon Hayward, you re-sign long-term. He opts out, sticks around for like 3 years. I don't know, what's that, $60, $70 million? I think, yeah, that works. Final answer. I'm going to go with Christoph P., by the way, who kind of goes on the same note here. His offseason, Hayward opts out and is signed to a 4-year deal at roughly $20 million per. Okay, that works for me. Sign and trade for Danilo Gallinari, sending Kanter, Theis, Poirier, Romeo Langford, and a first-round pick. Get back to that. Sign Aaron Baines with the mid-level. Minimum exception for a scoring guard off the bench. Bazemore, Austin Rivers, Jeff Teague, DJ Augustine. In my opinion, this will give us exactly what we need. A big defensive center, a small ball five, backup point guard, so on and so on. Allow us to go small with Gallo at the five or big with Baines at the five and Gallo at the four. He also says, parentheses, still bummed Jam and Jay King aren't on the podcast with you anymore. You know, I used to be, but then, you know, I was listening to one of their shows recently and Jam out of nowhere hits me with an unwarranted shot about me saying Robert Williams needed to get some minutes in the G League last year. If that was the case, I don't need to relitigate that. I stand my position. Robert Williams needed minutes. And I think I've been proven right. Robert Williams needs minutes. And he didn't get those minutes. I mean, he was hurt. But however he gets minutes, he gets minutes. So, you know what? They can go off and have their little fun over at some other network. Okay. It would still be nice to podcast with them. All right, so back to Christoph's question. I do not think that Gallinari for Kanter, Theis, Poirier, Romeo Langford. I mean, if Kanter opts in, you've got Kanter, Theis, Poirier are all coming off the books. They get Romeo Langford, who I'd like, and a first-round pick. Gallinari hard caps the Celtics. So Hayward opts out. You get Aaron Baines with the taxpayer mid-level because you don't want to spend the full mid-level. Some shooting. You now have Baines as your starter. Robert Williams as your backup. Or, I don't know, vice versa. I don't know. Gallinari as a big option. Maybe you go big with him at the four or whatever. I just don't think that the Gallinari trade is, I don't know, maybe. But, I mean, they could use it as a way to get Romeo Langford. I suppose it just it depends on if Sam Presti values Romeo Langford. That first round pick, that 2020 pick, that low, they've got so many picks. At this point, they're probably looking for some value there. I don't know. Man, I think I'd still rather have Romeo Langford in this scenario. Yeah, Hayward can opt out. You can still sign Aaron Baines if you want. You can do other stuff with the bigs if you want. Austin Rivers, I mean, maybe. I don't know. I see some value to some of these pieces. I just don't think the Gallinari thing is going to happen. And I want to keep Romeo Langford. I like Romeo Langford. I think Romeo Langford would be, and I wrote this on the Mass Live piece. I don't want to give away the whole Mass Live thing, but it's also 3,500 words. So there's a lot there. So I'm not giving up the whole thing. But I like Romeo Langford. He has this natural fluidity to his game. And you didn't see a ton, but when you saw something there, it was like, huh, okay, yeah, I get it. I get it. I get why they like him. You fix his shot, maybe some of that bad injury luck goes away. That would be nice. But I don't know. I think Romeo Langford, he's got something. He's got something that I like. So I want to keep him. That's my final answer there. All right, let's take a break. Going to come back with questions about my favorite brewery in Boston. Because you can ask questions about the Celtics. You can ask questions about the NBA. You can ask me other questions. And then the question about passing. That's next on the Locked On Celtics podcast. Be sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. Going to wrap up the mailbag podcast here. Remember, email me, jcorrales@masslive.com. With your questions, I'll answer them on the Friday Locked On Celtics podcast or on the Friday masslive.com/Celtics piece that I do. So, Josh S. has a question about passing. And he says, I think passing is one of the parts of the game that people often overlook when analyzing teams and players. I can't help but think that if Boston had a pass-first point guard like Rubio or Rondo, they wouldn't have stagnated so much in late-game situations. I just never felt like they were putting defenses on their heels with their passing ability. So on and so forth, I was happy to see Tatum and Brown start to take their playmaking to the next level, but there's still no one on the roster who consistently make high-level passes. Hayward and Smart can do it in spurts, while Kemba's always been a score-first point guard. So this becomes, you know, more. There's more to it, but basically, the passing and is passing overlooked, and what's the best solution? I will say that what Brad Stevens is trying to do, and offensively, he's a fantastic defensive coach. The thing about defense in the NBA, and I'm sorry to stray from the actual question for a second, but you'll see where I'm going with this. The thing about defense in the NBA is that it's defense and it can be played at any level. Defense is defense, and it doesn't matter what you're like, just be here, be there. It's effort, done. Defense is defense, it's effort. And the schemes are the schemes, but you're just figuring out how to put people in the right places. They slide, take the right angles, make the right rotations, communicate. That's defense. Okay? Offense is a different animal in the NBA. And I think this is why Brad Stevens' offensive system has not been at the level of the defensive system, where offensively, he wants this very democratic ball movement, make the next right play, and the passing will take care of itself. And that is both 100% true, but also kind of wrong. It's 100% true because in a vacuum, that is 100% true. No matter which five players are on the floor, you've got your drivers, you've got your shooters. I mean, sometimes they're the same person, but you've got your drivers, you've got your shooters, you've got your bigs. The drivers drive. If they can score, fine. If they don't, they kick. The shooters shoot. But if they don't have a shot, then they drive and then they kick. And that's what we're talking about all the time throughout the regular season. Drive, kick, multiple attacks, get the ball side to side. A very democratic way to run an offense. unfortunately, that doesn't happen as often as we'd like in the NBA. Because, for various reasons, first of all, guys are great in the NBA. So, below the NBA level, it's easier to do what Brad Stevens wants to do. Because, generally speaking, there isn't one guy that can always, always, always get his shot and always, always create. Okay? No matter what that level, whatever that next level down is, and it's probably like EuroLeague. But at the NBA level, you've got a bunch of guys who think, oh, I can make this shot. And this is where the Celtics have their problems. So Brad Stevens wants a system where it's drive and kick. Make the next right play. When you drive, what's this guy doing? Is he stepping up? Okay, your path is blocked. Are two people coming at you? One guy is open. Where's that guy open? Where did that double come from? Did it come from the baseline? That means somebody's open in the corner. Did it come from up high? Then somebody high opposite is open. There are a lot of things to look at and recognize. And these guys are elite. They can see these things in real time most of the time. But, and I'm sorry if I'm saying things that maybe you don't understand, but the point is, these guys can do the stuff that Brad Stevens says, but the amount of space that they need to get a shot that they feel that they can make is so much smaller. So picture a big hoop on a rope, and you're 10 feet away, and you're being asked to throw a football through that hoop, and it's the size of a hula hoop. Okay, from 10 feet away, okay, I can do that. Now, picture a tire with a hole half that diameter swinging in motion, and now get that football through that hoop. Okay? You can get the ball through the hula hoop. I can get the ball through the hula hoop. An NBA player can get that ball through that swinging tire. Brad Stevens wants these guys to run an offense, and a lot of times it's like the hula hoop. If you don't see a space big enough like that hula hoop, then pass the ball. That's the object. Drive, if you don't see that hula hoop in front of you, then pass the ball, which is easy. But these players know that they can throw the ball through the swinging tire. And so when you drive and you see that tire swinging and you know it's about to come through, it doesn't matter who's on you. If you know you can see that tire, you're going to take a shot. And it's a tough shot. But these guys have the confidence and the ability a lot of times to do that. So that is a big problem with the democratic offensive system that Brad Stevens wants guys to run. When they do it, and we've seen them do it, it's awesome. And a lot of times when they do it against really good defenses because the defenses don't even let them see the swinging tire. So they have to do what Brad Stevens says. NBA players are just so damn good, and this is part of Marcus Smart's problem. Like, your problem is that you're good and you can get this shot that you have confidence in making. That's the NBA in a nutshell. The NBA is so crazy, so difficult that you getting a shot that you're confident in and you feel good about is a problem because other players can get better shots that they're confident in. So, the passing, what's the solution? Is it the solution to get a guy that doesn't feel confident in those shots? Somewhat Rondo-ish? Somewhat Rubio-ish? But then the defensive adjustment is, well, then we let those guys see the hula hoop. You know? Fine. Hula hoop. We'll put a whole big thing, whatever you want. Whatever the size of hoop you want, go ahead, take it, man. It's all you. And then they take away the pass because they know that they want to pass first. So there is, yes, I understand. Do you want a pass first guy? Sure. You can start Marcus Smart. He's a better passer. He does more than pass well in spurts. He's a great passer. But what does that get you? Each guy that comes in with a skill, Kemba's ability to hit the three is supposed to accentuate his ability to pass. And because you play up on him and you have to respect that shot, you have to respect his drive, and then he passes off of that stuff. It's not that they need a Rondo type. It's not that they need a Rubio type. It's that the Celtics just need the ball to move. They need the ball to pop. And what the players on the team need to do is understand that no matter what, you have to understand time, space, situation. If the ball pops, you're going to get the shot that you want. This is the biggest thing that I have for Marcus Smart, my number one piece of advice for Marcus Smart. And a lot of these guys, the shot that you feel confident in, you can get a lot of the times. These shots are shots you can get a lot of the time. But move the ball and see if we can get a better shot. And eventually, you'll get something that works for you too. But move the ball. Just move the ball. NBA is a different animal. I hope that helped. All right. Jimmy S. wants to know, and Jimmy likes to send these hypothetical trades. So, if you're Washington or the Pelicans, would you go for this? Send Wiggins to the Pelicans for Brandon Ingram. Immediately, no. Immediately, no. Even if you're giving them the number two pick, which he suggests. But he says, okay, Wiggins to the Pelicans for Brandon Ingram, the number two pick, and the Wolves pick. No. Nope. I'm keeping Brandon Ingram. Anything that involves me getting Andrew Wiggins, I'm pretty much out on, I feel like. But next, Wiggins for Beal and give them the number two pick and the Wolves pick. Yes. Wiggins for Beal, the number two pick. Maybe Eric Pascal. I don't think that does it either. Because I don't know what Washington's motivation really, really is. I feel like they want to give it one more shot. Now, if I'm running the Wizards, I'm putting Beal on the market. I'm trying like hell to figure out something for John Wall. I am starting over. But John Wall needs to play to show that he can still play. So my offseason moves are move Bradley Beal, and I don't think the number two pick and Pascal are gonna do it. I think there are better offers out there for Bradley Beal. If you make Bradley Beal available, you can get more than number two and Pascal. Then I go to John Wall and I say, look, John, go off. You'd go nuts. This is your audition. You go nuts. And I'm going to shop you and try to get you into a good situation. You go nuts and you show one of these good teams that you're the missing piece. I'll send you to a winning situation. I'll pull a Paul George trade. I'll pull a Russell Westbrook trade. I'm going to do my best to, like, we're done. We're done. I'm sorry. We're done. But I want to do right by you. Play your ass off. And I want to get you to a contender that thinks you're the missing piece. I'm not going to ship you off to Minnesota. I'm not going to ship you off to somewhere like Indiana where you're going to be middle of the pack. Let's see if we can get you to a place with a chance that says, whoa, John Wall is balling out. Need to get him. His injuries are in the past. I need to get him. That's my plan for the Wizards. But I'm blowing it up. But I think Bradley Beal can get you a lot. Bradley Beal can get you a lot, and I'm shopping him for everything I can get. Couple more before we wrap things up. Bruno S. from Paraguay wants to know, shout out to the international listeners, by the way. Got a few of you asking questions. Thank you. Celtics related question. I personally think that the IT trade optics are still hanging, are still a thing that follows the Celtics. Do you feel that trading Hayward won't put us in a bad light again? I get it. Isaiah was hurt. He gave everything for the Celtics. And after everything, after his sister passed in that accident, trading him was just kind of cold, kind of cruel. Yeah. I don't know that that hurt the Celtics. I really don't know if it did or not. Business is business in the NBA. And I think everybody understands that business is business. Money and a chance to win a title erase a lot of these bad feelings. So if the Isaiah Thomas trade is something that you think hangs over the Celtics, and if you think a Gordon Hayward trade would hang over the Celtics, I'll tell you that a player with money to make and a ring to win, if he thinks that Boston is the place to do it, he's going to come to Boston. He'll go anywhere. You know, that's, I know that, I know this reputation that's kind of been out there, and maybe some guys won't. I don't know. I can't speak for every NBA player, but I don't think the Gordon Hayward thing puts Boston in that same spot. You know, and Isaiah Thomas has said himself that he's not worried about that stuff anymore. So I don't think that is something the Celtics need to worry about. They can get players. I don't think anybody that sees Boston's situation, if it's a mid-level guy or if they have cap space later, if this is an opportunity to win, then they will consider Boston. I know it's not LA. I know it's not Miami. It's cold. Winters suck. Traffic sucks. It's not the best place to live. I get it. But I don't think these trades are going to be something that are a tiebreaker. Personal question, of the local breweries in Boston, which one is your favorite? That's a tough question because there are a lot of local breweries in Boston. I have not been to Night Shift Brewing, but I've had Night Shift beers. And so I'm going to say of the local brews. Now, I can say Sam Adams, but it is still a local craft brew, but that doesn't count. I think Night Shift is probably my favorite. And the problem with the local breweries is a lot of them have suffered a lot during COVID. I used to like Mystic, but Mystic shut down in the lead up to COVID. I don't think it was COVID related, but I liked Mystic Brewing and they seem to enjoy some success. But honestly, yeah, Night Shift is great. Might be my favorite, but I don't think you can go wrong with most of these craft breweries, because I think the science has advanced to a point where if these guys have grown into a place that has a tap room, then you're basically going to find something good. If I go somewhere and I see that this brewery has a tap room and there are people in there, then I trust it. Be honest with you, because I trust the science. I trust the collaborations. I think what I love about craft breweries is that they're very collaborative, even though there's some competition. I think craft brewing is very much kind of like, it's almost like Prohibition era, an environment where, yeah, there's competition and everything. Everybody wants to grow, but you also have this Prohibition era type like corner. Like, this is our block, and everybody from this block or this general area kind of comes here. And if you live in a different part of town, yeah, maybe you can come over here, but you go to the craft brewery over there. When I was living in New York City, that was very, very evident. craft brewery in New York City, that was just, I mean, awesome. Awesome. Especially out in the boroughs. Manhattan, not so much, but out in the boroughs, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, there are some amazing craft breweries. If you go to New York, there are some amazing craft breweries. And because the neighborhoods are so dense, it really allows for a lot of them to open up within a fairly close proximity to one another. And they're not kind of cannibalizing each other. But that's my take on craft brewing. Last question comes from Simon R. from Australia, who I'll get the basketball question first. He says, aside from all of Australia, which we know is Aaron Baines, if you had to have one other Aussie or another Aussie on the Celtics, who would you want? That is a tough question because I think there are a couple of good choices. First of all, I know people might say Ben Simmons, who is an Australian basketball player. He plays for the Australian national team. I'm not going to say Ben Simmons. My choice, I might go. Now, are we going with like current guys, like right now? Because I like Patty Mills. And I've liked Patty Mills for a while. I'd love to get Patty Mills on the Celtics. Who fits more right now? If there was a way for them to get Joe Ingles, I think that would be great. I'm certainly not going to go with Matthew Dellavedova. That's for damn sure. I know Ben Simmons is the best of the players, but if I'm thinking right now, Celtics, like who could help the most? Patty Mills off the bench, maybe, but I know Joe Ingles is too expensive, but I think Patty Mills off the bench might be the most realistic guy. And Joe Ingles might be, if there is a way to swing a realistic deal for him, I don't know what that would take. I haven't looked into it, but I think Joe Ingles would work very well in Boston. Now, the personal question, the final question. For those of us not in Boston, or even in the U.S., what is it about Boston that you like the most? What is it about it that you love so much? Is there a movie you feel accurately portrays the feel of Boston? Okay, every movie exaggerates Boston to some degree, okay? And Boston is this unique entity. There's stereotypical Boston, which is basically Southie, which is, you know, the Good Will Hunting, very Irish, very Boston accent. That was horrible. You know, that was horrible. My God. That very Boston, you know, that car. Where's my car? That kind of guy. Nasally, drops his eyes. A little gruff. Yeah, he's from Southie. That guy. Probably calls into WEI all the time. That guy. That's stereotypical Boston. That's the Boston you see in the movies. Boston is so different now. There are, obviously, Southie's part of it. You've got the Beacon Hill part of it. You've got the Dorchester part of it. The thing about Boston, it's so segmented. What I love about Boston is its neighborhood kind of feel. So I've lived in New York. I've lived in Boston. New York is a big city. Boston is a big town. And I love Boston for being a big town. It's a major city. It's a major world city. It has tremendous influence strategically, economically, all of that stuff. I'm certainly not diminishing Boston. But when I grew up, Boston had this inferiority complex, and it still has this inferiority complex. It's a big middle finger to New York. The Yankees. We hate the Yankees. Red Sox, Yankees, ugh. I got to New York. Here's my biggest lesson. When I was around Boston, we see a guy with a Yankees hat on. You had something to say. You had something to say. When you see Yankees gear walking around Boston, people have something to say. You have Lakers gear walking around Boston, people have something to say about that. When I got to New York and I was living in New York, I remember, I might have tweeted this out too, who knows when. I remember going out there, I was like, oh man, I can't wait to wear my Red Sox. It was like a Red Sox-Yankees playoff series, and I was decked head to toe in Red Sox gear. And I was like, oh man, I can't wait to piss these people off. And my New York friends are like, yeah, we don't care. We don't care. You got whatever. That's nice. You're from Boston. What if you're in Manhattan, there's millions of people from Boston. There's the Boston people everywhere. You know, go to Professor Tom's right outside the East Village. Professor Tom's. If you're in New York, go to Professor Tom's. That's like a Boston embassy. But there are Boston bars everywhere. Boston people everywhere. When I wore my Red Sox gear, I had more people from Boston saying, hey, cool, than I had New York people going, ah, screw you. I never had any New York people say, screw you. But I had Boston people go, oh, yeah, cool, man. I'm from Boston, too. Or I'm from New England. What I love about Boston, once you shed all that other stuff, what I love about Boston is that it is a big town. That, you know, that run down the Esplanade that I used to do is just, it's nice. It's calm. You know, I know you're running along Storrow Drive, but it's not like you're running along, you know, the BQE or anything like that. I'm not running down a lane down the middle of the Van Wyck. It's nice. It's smaller. It's, but I like that. It has its downsides, sure. But I just like that Boston has this, like, it does have this kind of like legacy feel to it. The people from Boston are from Boston. What I would hope, and no one asked me this, but what I would hope is that when we talk about the people who are from Boston, we can expand it out and really talk about the people from Boston. Because I think, just look at the Sam Adams commercial, your cousin from Boston. It's the same Boston stereotype. And there are millions of people, or hundreds of thousands of people, because Boston isn't big enough for that many millions of people, but there are hundreds of thousands of people who are generations deep Bostonians. And they're nothing like that. So, I love Boston, but Boston definitely has its flaws. And I mean, part of why I love Boston is I'm from the area and it has an emotional connection. You know, going to college in Boston, this living in the area, this feeling like this is home for me, that I'm always going to love it. I want more for it. I want more for Boston. And so hopefully when you see things about Boston, we can start asking about, okay, what about the rest of Boston? Because there's a side of Boston, there's a rest of Boston that a lot of people don't know, don't talk about, don't realize exists. And these people are as much Boston as anybody else. But they're not Southie Irish Boston, so they're not the Boston people that you see in the movies. Boston is a lot more diverse. So, if anything, I hope people realize that about Boston. All right, that's been the mailbag. I hope you guys appreciate the mailbag. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. New listeners, hope this is enough for you to subscribe. You regular listeners, hope you've found this enjoyable enough to give a 5-star rating and a good written review. If your question has not been answered on the podcast, that means it's been answered on masslive.com/Celtics. Go there to see how I've answered your question. I'm doing this every Friday, So email me, jcorrales@masslive.com, with your questions, and I will answer them here or on Mass Live. That's how this works. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.